Loudspeakers.
Should be, yeah.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
It's better, huh? You should hear me.
I can hear you, but not from the speakers.
I'm sure that it is from the speakers. I hear them. What do you think? Okay. I hope the other students will appear. Oh, we may wait a couple of minutes before they appear. So,
before that,
we can configure that camera as well. Here,
then start the software. Good. Okay, it's better than expected. So where are they now? Aha, they're coming. Okay, I was waiting for you. We have stopped at prioritizing alerts. So we said that before that there are many alerts, not all of them are of the same importance, and the operator has to decide what is the most important for that particular defending network. Consider these two situations as an example. In one of these situations, we detect port scanning, which may be an indicator of a possible attack in the future, but at that time, particular when the port scanning is detected, it doesn't require so much attention, so much action at least, by the operator. But in another situation, an attack that might immediately stop the operation of the defending web server was detected. Such an attack would require the highest priority because we have to do something now to stop the attack. Most of today's IDS are capable of prioritizing the alerts that they generate, but not all of them offer the same flexibility and granularity at defining priorities of alerts as Snort does. The best option is to offer customizable prioritization of alerts. In this type of prioritization, users of the IDS define alert priorities. Of course, you have some prioritization by default, but you can override that. And we are going to see a couple of examples. In modern networks, we need this customizable prioritization because each network is unique. For example, an academic network like here at NTNU and the banking network are quite different. You see? Services that run are different, traffic distributions and many other characteristics are also different. The number of attacks is different. So a bank is expected to be heavily attacked, unlike an NTNU. Who would attack a university? For what reason? Just for to show that they are powerful, or to what happened in Britain? They did it with this ransomware that they launched. They were just looking for vulnerable sites. But it was not a target. That's another story. So it's less likely for an academic institution to be a target of an attack, unless some special circumstances. But a bank, for example, or another kind of state organ is expected to suffer more from this. The only common characteristic of such networks are the basic communication protocols that are used, TCP/IP. So what Snort offers is a customizable prioritization scheme with four predefined severity levels: high, medium, low, and very low. And these severity levels are closely related to the class type identifier of every rule that we have seen before in our rule examples. So we said class type, we are going to explain it a bit later. And this is now. So this class type identifier categorizes attacks by default into classes of similar attacks. For example, high priority event class types are these: attempted administrator privilege gain, attempted user privilege gain, inappropriate content detected, potential corporate privacy violation, executable code detected. So these are high priority alerts, and there are some others: successful administrator privilege gain. You see, successful administrator privilege gain and attempted administrator privilege gain, they belong to the same high priority event class. I personally don't agree with this. Successful administrator privilege gain is definitely more important. But we can change this. Then we have successful user privilege gain, a network trojan detected, unsuccessful user privilege gain, web application attack. And that's it. So these are high priority event class types in Snort. The severity level of each of these categories can be modified arbitrarily. And you can add custom alert categories as an operator. And for this, we have a separate rule set. So a completely new family of rules. Let's illustrate this on an example. So attempted administrator privilege gain. That's one of the items in this high priority category. The rule for such alert prioritization that is contained in the Snort configuration file classification.config. And this classification.config is included in snort.conf file. And by default, we have this: config classification, attempted admin, attempted administrator privilege gain, and one. That means highest priority. So this is a rule for prioritizing alerts. The meaning of this rule is it is valid for any type of attempted administrator privilege gain activity. It grants the highest severity level when logging. This is one. And this means that these attacks are considered the most dangerous for the defending network. The administrator privilege gain, why is that? If successful, guarantees the attacker full control over the system. Now, we can understand why attempted administrator privilege gain is put in this high priority class. Because if successful, it will make damage. But it doesn't mean that it is the same priority as successful administrator privilege gain, which has already gained the privilege. Now this, if we put it in the highest priority and we get an alert, will give us some time to cope with this before the attempt is successful. So that's why they put it in the highest priority category. So think about that. Why should anybody put attempted privilege gain and successful privilege gain in the same high priority category? So time is important. You have some time difference between attempt and success that you can use to defend yourself. Any rule classified as attempted administrator privilege gain activity would correspond to the classification rule that is given here. Config classes. So they would give priority one. And how is it determined when you read the rule? By means of this class type. So it will say class type attempted admin. So that will be in the rule. And once they discover attempted admin, they would give it the priority one, because it is defined by this config classification. For example, on the slide 202, you have this rule. Alert TCP, external net, HTTP ports, home net any, web client, Windows meta file, invalid header size, integer overflow. One of the attacks. Now, flow from server established. Content, you see, D7CD C69A. These vertical lines, they just indicate that this is to be interpreted as hex. But this is obvious in this particular case. Class type, you see, class type attempted admin. So this means go to classification config and check what priority is given to attempted admin. So the system will consult this rule. Config classification, attempted admin. What it means is attempted administrator privilege gain, and the priority is one. So that's what they are going to do. So the class type identifier in the rule defines the relation between the detection rule and the prioritization rule. Any detected attack classified as an attempted administrator privilege gain activity would be given the priority one, because that's defined in the classification rule. But we can change this. This can be overridden by the user. So we can say, if we are not concerned with Windows meta file related activity, but we want to keep priority one for all the other alerts from this category, we can override the classification rule with a priority identifier. So we say, we leave all this, you see, but we give it priority two. That applies only to this rule, not to all attempted admin rules. So that's the trick. By this priority keyword and the value, you actually override the classification rule that is in classification.config, but only for this particular rule. So that's about logging and alerting and priorities. So you should know this. The next thing that we are going to talk about is distributed SNORC architecture. The networks are getting bigger and faster. And we have a software system that is SNORC. So when we increase the speed of traffic, then after some limit, the SNORC will not capable of processing all that. So we shall experience the drop of packets. This is a scalability problem, okay? And in complex system based on software, if we don't want hardware solution, we can use a distributed architecture, an N-tier architecture. So instead of implementing a large system on a single host that is governed by a single application, the tasks are distributed between tiers. It is typically a three-tier architecture, and we are going to talk about this because it's typical, but it can be one. We have tried that in the exercises, just one sensor, small sensor, but it can be also four tiers. So we can add a layer. And on the slide 209, you have how it looks like. So we have the first tier, which is the sensors. Okay? So we have sensors, each of them being a machine implementing SNORC, running SNORC. So that's the sensor tier. Then you typically have a firewall. Then you have the second tier, which is called the server tier, and these servers actually communicate with sensors. So each server communicates with several sensors. And in these servers, we can apply some restrictions like filtering, etc., etc. But the primary purpose is just gathering data. So what travels between the sensors and the server is alerts. And finally, we have a console. So that's the third tier, or the console tier. So, a typical three-tier SNORT architecture is a battery of sensors, which means a set of sensors. Between the sensor tier and the second tier, which is the SNORT server tier, there is typically a firewall. And then the third tier contains the console on which it is possible to run additional presentation software, like Base and what we have seen before. On a large network, a SNORT sensor can be installed on any host, and there can be several such hosts. Then there is a server that processes information, which is alerts generated by these sensors. And after processing and eventually filtering by the servers, information is finally sent to the console. So let's consider the sensor tier, where the real intrusion monitoring takes place. Why? Because traffic goes to sensors. So each sensor collects packets, analyzes them, and sends the generated alerts to the second tier, which is the server tier. On each sensor, we have a SNORT application that runs, and this SNORT application interprets the nature of the collected packets and generates alerts, if any. Now, they don't process the alerts, so they just send them to the servers, to other tiers. Sensors have to be placed carefully because they have to be capable of processing traffic that comes to them. So we have to minimize packet drop. We also have to minimize the probability of sensor evasion, attacks against sensors. The sensors should run only SNORT and supporting applications, if any, and nothing else. The problem with SNORT is that it is not capable of processing in cipher traffic, encrypted traffic, and because of that, if you want to process that, you have to decipher on the very sensor. Why are we running only SNORT and eventually supporting applications on the host? Because it's more secure and it doesn't consume so many resources. So if you want a sensor, SNORT sensor, you run only SNORT on that machine. So you have to dedicate the machine to that, which is expensive actually, but that's what we need for security. Regarding security, on these sensors, we only open the ports that are used by SNORT. So we have to harden this machine. We must have two network interfaces, or physically cards, but two network interfaces in general on that sensor. The packet intercepting interface and the interface for communication with servers. That's called the management interface. Why do we want that separated? Because the intercepted packets arrive through the first interface, and this first interface is actually almost required, or it's better to be without a dedicated IP address, unbound. And all the outgoing alerts are sent through the second interface that have to allow for bidirectional communication, because the server can also program the sensors. So, as we said, the packet intercepting network interface, the sensing interface, is not assigned an IP address. It is connected to the network segment to be monitored, but it only listens. So you never use it to communicate for communication. So the traffic only flows in one direction from the monitor network segment to the sensor. Now, why do we need this? Why do we avoid bidirectional communication with the monitor network? Because if we allow for that, it opens the possibility of bringing down the very sensor by the attacker. So that's IDS evasion, for a kind of. So to avoid IDS, you can just switch it off if you are an attacker. So that's bringing down the sensor. Now, the possibility for this is reduced if we don't send any traffic from that network interface. So we only listen. To receive data addressed to any host in the monitor network, we configure that interface to run in so-called promiscuous mode. We have commented on that on the very first lecture. So no matter what the destination IP address in the packet that is intercepted is, we capture it. That's promiscuous mode. Now, running a network interface without a building binding IP address is called operating in stealth mode. So at the high level, it's not visible, this interface. You cannot, you cannot send traffic to it. Not at the IP level, because it doesn't have address. This enhances security because such a card cannot be detected easily by an attacker. It can be detected by through some other means. But by this, we reduce possibility of sending attack traffic against the snort sensor. Now, how can we as an attacker cope with this? We can attack the whole segment, the whole network segment. So it's a typical automatic attack performed by a robot by launching denial of service, overloading attack or exploit that could cause the sensor to stop. But for this, we must have some insider information that there is a sensor there. Otherwise, we should have a lot of resources to attack everything. So it's more difficult if we don't assign an IP address to a network sensor, so it only listens. Now we have another interface, which is the management network interface card. It is connected to a separate network segment that is reserved only for snort management, and that's the server tier. It must have an IP address because we need bidirectional communication, so it is not only alerts to the server, but it's also configuration to sensors. Because occasionally we have to change the rules. For example, if our sensor is somewhere in Trondheim and our console is here in Jovik, then we have to send to actualize, to update the sensors there in Trondheim. And we do that by using this channel, from servers to sensors. So that's bidirectional. But of course, the main purpose of this architecture is to receive alerts by servers from the sensors. Alerts are most of traffic and configuration occasionally, not all the time. Control of the sensors is realized through this card, as we said. The management process is this: upgrading the sensors, for example, that's typical. Sometimes tuning, fine-tuning snort remotely by adding, removing, or modifying existing rules. Sometimes we adjust the preprocessor parameters in order to reduce the number of false positives and to avoid dropping packets. So we can, for example, log into that sensor by means of SSH, and we then see the file system as if it were local, and we can edit the configuration files manually. So that's what we can do from remote, from the server. Of course, since it is bidirectional, we have to defend this from attacks, because the attacker will try to cut the stream of rules from a sensor to a cell. We use a firewall for this, but if the sensors and the cell reside on different geographical locations, which is typical, then we need more complicated security measures, not only a firewall. We may need another IES, even that. So that was about sensors. Now let's check the servers. They receive alerts, as we said. They may store them in usually a database or maybe some other form like syslog, but usually typically a database. The advantage of the database is in the possibility of performing complex searches on that, complex queries. That's more easily done than in some other kind of storage. It's faster. The data presentation by means of graphical user interfaces that are easy to work with is then easier with the database. But this is done in console and not on server. Now, we have a lot of sensitive confidential information that is present on the servers, and because of that, we have to secure these servers. If an attacker takes control of a server, then he can control the whole segments, etc., etc., so that's really bad. How do we do that? We configure the server in such a way that the minimum number of services are installed, just those that are needed. But that's typical. You do that with any server. So the same thing you would use with a web server, you do with this kind of server. Actually, you do run a web server on each Snort server. Because of that, the web server software has to be updated regularly. So that's a server. Receives alerts and sends configuration to the sensors. And finally, we have the console tier, which is the place where the data are presented to the operator in a human readable form. It's a dedicated machine or machines or control center, whatever, on which a web browser that supports encipherment, which is usually by means of TLS, is installed. Of course, this is typical. You can use a proprietary software for protecting data. It's not forbidden. So what you do with this, it's your will. Usually we run a graphical user interface on the console, which means something like base or something else. Base has been mentioned many times today. We have possibility of convenient data presentation there. We have to make a console dedicated machine, because we need even physical access protection, etc., etc., to that. And we also, when it's not physical, we have to prevent other applications from interfering with the IDS. So that's the architecture. What is its security? We have to achieve high level of security of Snort installation. For this, we obey, as we said before, the same rules that we would do with any other application. So, harden sensors, servers, consoles, kept up to date in order to ensure security of intrusion detection data while they reside on the corresponding tiers. The data must also be protected during the transfer. For this, we can use tunnel, encipherment, etc., etc., strong authentication mechanisms. Regarding the web servers that are used on the server tier, we can only allow the machines that need to communicate with them to communicate with them, so not just anybody. For encipherment, we can use any kind of tunnel, like this one, S-tunnel. And digital certificates, strong password authentication, anything that you can imagine that you would do with other systems, you can do with this. As we said, the server should allow only the sensor's IP addresses to connect to them. That's easy. So you can configure that on any web server, like Apache or any other. The console browser should make connections to the graphical user interface, such as base, on the web server via TLS also. And the pages on the web server should be password protected. So that's the security. If we apply all these possible security measures on the very IDS, in the case of Snort, then we prevent attacker from trying to disable the IDS somehow first. That's very important, otherwise we remain unprotected even though we have invested in the IDS. So that was about distributed architecture and how it is secured. What remains is to talk about post-installation adjustment of Snort. Why is this important? Because if you install Snort, you have seen that, you have a default installation. And this default installation is suited for a general network, which we said that it doesn't exist. So there is no such a thing as general network. So it was configured in such a way that most networks would be partially satisfied with it. Now, real networks are so different that such an installation cannot achieve maximum performance on any of them. So we know our network best, and we have to configure Snort in such a way that it protects our network best. If we don't do that, we get false positives. That's annoying. But the worst thing is we get false negatives, which is incapability of Snort or any IDS to process all the packets. So once we have a packet drop, then we may have false negatives, because in that drop packets that are not analyzed at all, there might be an attack. Because of all this, every network-based IDS has to be adjusted to the particular network configuration upon installation, and that also holds for Snort. There are two goals of the adjustment process. First, increase performance, which means reduce the number of drop packets to a minimum. So, we said that before. If we experience packet drop, we have to eliminate that at all costs, because it's better to have some false positives than to have false negatives. So the first goal is to increase performance and reduce the number of drop packets to a minimum, preferably to zero, which will keep the number of false negatives at a low level. The second goal is to reduce the number of false positives to a manageable one. What is manageable level? Manageable level is the one that operator can cope with. Now, we have to do it without reducing the number of true positives, and I have deliberately mentioned this because, unfortunately, as you are going to see in one of the next lectures, there is a theoretical connection between the number of true positives and the number of false positives. So you cannot have 100% true positive rate and 0% false positive rate, unfortunately. So that would be an ideal system, but such a thing doesn't exist. So, what shall we do to achieve these two goals? The first action is to check whether it drops packets. How do we do that? We issue the command that forces Snort to display its internal statistics on the screen. You have run Snort in the exercises, and you have noticed that when you stop Snort, these statistics are displayed on the screen. Once these statistics are displayed, we can use the display data to adjust and track the progress in adjusting Snort parameters if necessary, and one of the items in these statistics is the number of dropped packets. Technically, we display internal statistics by stopping the process. For example, if it runs in foreground, as we have tried in exercises, we just Control-C, and that will do. The information about the internal statistics of Snort will then appear either on the screen, which is our case, or in the directory var log messages on a Linux or Unix system if it runs on in background. Because we can configure, and typically in production, we don't run it in foreground because we have to. We can do it, but then it's a dedicated machine. Cannot do much more on that because it's resource consuming. We can, of course, open another window of that machine and run something else, but that will consume the very system Snort will consume a lot of resources, so that machine would not be much of much use for anything else. And this on slide 241 is how it looks like. You have this dropped, you see? So receive packets on the wire, analyze this one, dropped that one, filtered outstanding. Outstanding is when you issue control C, it might be processing something. It will not finish. So that will be in outstanding. And you have this injected, it doesn't matter. But this dropped is what we are looking for. So this is zero in our case, so good. We don't have to think about drop packets. So it has to be either zero or very small. We have to keep this number low in order to avoid false negative situation. So what shall we do if we experience packet drop? If we use the database to collect the alerts, we should use Barnyard 2, which is fast. For that, we need Unify 2. So we have to, as we did on Tuesday, we have to configure Snort to send alerts to Unified 2 format. If some other applications are run on the same host as Snort, then we have to check CPU and memory usage on that machine. To this end, we may need some additional adjustment, and for this, we configure preprocessors and rule sets. For example, if we have to change the amount and type of data sent to a Snort sensor for inspection, there are certain kinds of traffic that consume much more bandwidth than the amount of malicious traffic that may be found in them. Which means it's highly unlikely that an attack would be there. And knowing this, we can say, Snort, don't analyze this traffic. We save some resources because usually the bandwidth here is huge. Typical examples are streaming media, multicast traffic. So you have television or sound or whatever. So it's a bunch of packets from one IP address and port to another IP address and port, not containing nothing but this media information. Then we may have traffic originating from a range of IP addresses for which we know in advance that they are safe. Now, of course, we take a risk, but we have experienced drop of packets, so we must have some compromise here. Some, let's say, trade-off. The risk that is taken is that of spoofing. So if the attacker knows that we know for this range of IP addresses that it is safe, then they can spoof. We have seen how easy it is. So they spoof attack as if it were coming from these addresses. That's easy thing to do. Then we may have traffic originating from a specific group of hosts that are known by the system administrator to generate a lot of false positives. For example, training. Here at NTNU, there are many things like that, so people are exercising. In our class, we generate attacks. You have seen port scanning, Smurf, we tried the buffer overflow, many things, but we know that it's just a game. We are not launching real attacks. So we may ignore that, otherwise Snort would give, or any other IDS would give alerts on this. Then in cipher traffic, that consumes actually a lot of bandwidth and more because more and more traffic is in cipher. That's a real problem for Snort because it cannot do this. It cannot perform in cipher traffic analysis. So processing such packets would be just wasting of resources. What we can do with Snort is to process headers only because payload is in cipher. We cannot in cipher headers because the traffic would not reach the destination. Technically, how do we filter out traffic? We can do it with Snort or outside of Snort. With Snort, they are compatible with this BPF, Berkeley packet filtering statements, and that is filtering at the network interface, which means sleepy cap in most cases level. So we can do this by sending calls to procedures in this library that would filter out some traffic. Another way is something that we can do easily as users is to define what is home net and what is external net. We have seen in the exercise and in some examples here in the lectures that the variable home net and external net is configurable. If you open the snort.com file, you can define what is home net and what is external net. So if you don't want some segment to be analyzed, you exclude it from home net. There are ways of monitoring the performance capability of Snort, and for this we have a special preprocessor that we have mentioned in the class, which is called Performance Monitor. It's not activated by default, unlike some other IDS. For example, in the case of Suricata, the performance monitor that they have is active by default. If you don't want it, you have to switch it off. In the case of Snort, it's not activated by default. If you want it, then you have to uncomment the line about this preprocessor in the snort.conf file. This performance monitor can be very useful in the adjustment process because if you really want to run it in a production environment, then you have to configure it very, very carefully and to adjust the parameters of your network. We can have preprocessor profiling and rule profiling, which is measuring the lengths of various phases of intrusion detection. For example, preprocessing and some rules. How much resources do they consume? We start with performance monitor. We display what they have to say, the performance monitor. And then we can adjust parameters, then run it again, look at performance monitor statistics, etc., until we are satisfied with the performance. The output of performance monitor by default is comma-separated format file, but we can edit this and override that, and we can direct the output to the console. Why comma-separated? Because we can outsource processing of monitoring to a database. The same way as they do with alerts. And here is what they have. It's a lot of things. I can try to display this by rotating this slide, but then it will be really small, but we can try this. Something like this. So Snort real-time performance, you see? The number of received packets, the number of dropped packets, percentage, how many blocked if we are running inline, etc. So megabits per second, wire, IP, fragmented, reassembled, TCP rebuilt, application, whatever, many, many items here. CPU usage, pattern matching, percentage, how many patterns have been really matched, etc. So we are going to comment on this a bit. So we return to actual size and
view in normal view.
So it was just an illustration of what is inside of this performance statistics. To summarize, we have the packet drop rate, the network throughput processed by snort, megabits per second, the number of bytes per analyzed packet, the number of packets processed per second, etc., etc. So, some throughput metrics are further classified into several categories according to the numbers of fragments and reassembled packets by the IP protocol and TCP, the number of rebuilt packets. The values captured in the application layer are the most important because they are related to the bytes and packets passed through the preprocessor for normalization and inspection. Why? Because we usually send traffic through application layer. All the rest serves for establishment of connection, etc., etc. And in this application, there may be items to search for, as we have seen, these content rules, etc., etc. So application level processing is the most important. If we want to improve snort efficiency, then we have to reduce the values at the application level. All these percentages have to be smaller. We can filter out the traffic. We can use ignore ports parameter for avoiding some kind of traffic, etc., etc. Or you can use these Berkeley packet filtering statements. Let's have a break now. Ten minutes until 12:10. Sounds good. We have had a lot of problems with the camera before, so I changed the camera. Now apparently it goes better.
tatt i bruk.
Ja, men jeg også har tenkt på det. Men om du tenker på at de støtter jo ikke 4G-ringing og sånt, da. Så du får dårlig sikkerhet på telefonsamtalene dine.
Ja. Det det jeg har tenkt på.
Det sånn jeg bryr meg om.
Men er det noe som, det må jo være noe som har laget en nymåtens dumt telefon. Litt Doro telefon.
Ja, Doro. Doro.
Der har du det. Men hvorfor her?
Ja.
Men da ser du som det er en ny år,
da. Ja, da ser du gammel ut. Dere får bryr meg.
Har du noe nytt her i dag, da? Det er jo samme grense som vi gjør. Ja.
Ingen kan du sammenligne. Jeg er veldig interessert i å vite hva
det er.
Men hvorfor har jeg ikke kommet med dette greia?
Men det er stått.
Jeg tror
at
det
blir så bra å ta så mange
bruker.
Det er
en
liten pose
med
rasalen,
da.
Nei,
er det?
Ja, det er
så gøtt. Du kan ikke bruke det sånn.
Nei, det er vanskelig. Men det lå en hel kul der, eller så skal jeg bare ta den ned, da?
Ja.
Jeg har kjøpt det 79. Og den skal ta med. Skal vi inn ta prisen?
Ja. Jeg kan skrive til Espen fra Fremskrittspartiet.
Topic,
hva er det? Kaos i kassen.
Boller du og iste?
Boller og iste.
Hva er det?
Gjør du med sånne poser, støtpakke?
Ja.
Hva er det?
Hva er sånn da?
Tok du med en pose til, liksom?
Ja, jeg tok meg en pose til,
ja.
Så
var det mye igjen?
Ja, det var jo, faen, jeg hadde med sånne skimmer som jeg hadde hørt. Så hadde jeg fått en ny baller, jeg vet ikke. Faen, jeg skimmer hvem som betaler for det greia der, men det koster mye lenger.
Det er jo de som har reklamen oppe der. Det er jo ikke mange som har
visene der.
Men jeg tenker at de fleste gjør sånn som er, de tar ut en liten, og gir en pose til
å
se på denne reklamevisningen. Så må det være dårlig butikk, eller? Hvis du ikke får en nøffel som er jævla god, da, så må du kjøpe en nøffel, så lønner det seg at...
Ja, jeg tror kanskje de valgetrørene er den beste reklamen, de har papirgreiene er godt plass til det. Det var jo noen som satt og sånn i ordenskånd til Zalando.
Ja.
Men det er ikke sånn, ikke det?
Ja. Hva var forskjellene, har vi begynt det?
Ja,
hva
var det?
Gaveversjonen, ja. Gaveversjonen, ja, sånn... Sjampon, eller hva
det
er for?
Det er et påsen der, på åpen.
Den fanger.
Har du hørt... Visjonen, når du prater om Hassan på den.
Ok,
noen
drikker
noen
lakris
og
pære
den.
Ja, ja. Det er litt lakris.
Er
det annen vent,
egentlig? Ja. Jente det? Ja, lakris. Og så er det forskjellige smak på denne
måten. Jeg tror det var veldig glad i det da.
Paprika og cream
og
den.
Nei, jeg fikk ikke den. Du får spare deg til jente, men det blir kjempebra.
Damerne
får
latte og
dere får cappuccino. Men du har en ekstra boks med tamponger og annen farge på salen, det var for den.
Ja, det var
andre smak
på
skjøringen.
Ja.
Det var chili paprika,
smør
på, men
han var
der. Ja, det var den, jo. Chili paprika, det var en smak. Det var en jente
som
var.
Ja, det var det.
Okay, shall we continue? How can we interpret the throughput indicators? If the drop rate is low, we have already mentioned that we want the packet drop rate to be either zero or very low, and the throughput indicators are at a high level, then the snort performance is satisfactory and we don't have to do anything about it. An indicator of efficiency of the detection module is the pattern matching percentage. We have seen this on Dixie sample, it was 34% or something. The pattern matching percentage, which is the number of bytes processed by the pattern matching algorithm of snort compared to the total number of bytes input to snort. Because of the IP defragmentation, TCP reassembly, and some other protocol reassembly like DCI RPC, the percentage can be higher than 100% because of the overhead that is involved. Ideally, it should be small, much smaller than 100%, typically around 10%. So we would like, actually, to engage the pattern matching module as little as possible, because the pattern matching is the most resource-consuming part of snort. And if we don't engage it too much, then it's good. The problem is that some alerts can be, some attacks can be detected only if we engage the pattern matching module. We have already seen that. But what we can do, even though it's necessary to use the pattern matching module, what we can do regarding this to reduce this percentage is to configure the stream preprocessor properly, because reassembly has much to do with efficiency of the pattern matching engine. We can retain only reassembly on the ports and services that are critical to protect. We should also eliminate processing of the cipher traffic. We said that snort cannot do it, and we can do it with these ignore ports. Now, this, even though it's possible to do it like this, we shall see in the case of other intrusion detection and network monitoring systems like BRO, that it's not very intelligent, because actually any port can process any kind of information. And the attackers very often don't use typical ports for this. But if you do use the port 443 and ignore it, then in most cases it will do, because legal applications usually use dedicated ports for their activity. But even for the most often used applications like Skype and the others, they use very, very rare ports, not the port 443 for inside the traffic. We should also reduce the amount of HTTP client and server traffic inspected by snort by configuring the HTTP inspect preprocessor properly. So you have some parameters, client flow depth, server flow depth, etc., etc. So we are not going into details of this. If you really want to discover how to do this, you should read the snort manual. It's very detailed regarding each parameter. There are hundreds of parameters of these preprocessors, and each of them can be configured, and there are many, many values for these parameters, and you will get information. We don't require that for the exam to know to do it. Also for some other protocols like DCI, RPC, like this preprocessor, then you have max frag len option that can be configured. Always, not only with increasing performance in this sense, this parameter don't store large packets can be used as the last resort when everything else fails. You can use this option, and in the stream preprocessor you can increase efficiency of the system by not storing the large packets in this TCP reassembly process. So this is about this percentage of AHOC ORASIC usage. A list of stream preprocessor quality indicators is also included in this performance monitor report.
we have this, the number of sins per second, the number of sin acknowledges per second, stream cache timeouts, prune sessions per second, stream cache faults per second, timed out sessions per second, etc., etc. So we can configure the stream preprocessor to tune these parameters and increase efficiency of the TCP reassembly procedure, because stream preprocessor is about TCP reassembly. You have frag and you have stream. So frag is for IP and stream is for TCP and UDP, because UDP is considered in sessions. So the same way it's monitored. A large number of stream cache faults, for example, so this is one of the parameters, stream cache faults per second. So a large number of these stream cache faults indicates that older TCP sessions might be eliminated from the stream cache, even though the corresponding communication sessions are still active. How do we configure this? This memcap is an important parameter, the parameter that controls the use of memory by the stream preprocessor. Now, memory is cheap, and today you have typically 32 gigabytes of RAM on machines that run Snort, so you can put this memcap to be very large value, and you will not have problems, because otherwise it gets slower. So whenever it has this cache fault, it's any other caching. It's like any other caching. When you have a cache fault, then you have to transfer the data to a permanent memory and then get more data, etc., etc. But that's time-consuming. So that's the purpose of caching is to avoid this. So you know how caching works. You know that better than me. There is another parameter, max TCP. That's the maximum number of TCP sessions tracked simultaneously. You can also increase this. So that was about stream. We can also use the Snort performance monitor report to determine whether asymmetric communication takes place. For example, traffic in one direction goes through one path and in the opposite direction goes through another path. This is something that is unwanted in many cases, not only in the IES, and there will be problems both in firewalls and intrusion detection if we discover such kind of traffic. It is theoretically possible, and you know this, but we discover that by monitoring the ratio between sins per second and sin acknowledges per second, and we can by this determine whether there are such routing and retransmission problems. A ratio higher than 2 towards 1 will result in large number of stream cache faults and timeouts, and we should avoid this because it's an efficiency problem. So, not recommended to use Snort in asymmetric traffic environment. We have to set this memcap, max TCP, and timeout properly for this stream preprocessor to operate properly. If they are not configured well, then we shall have poor performance. And poor performance opens ways for IDS evasion. Recommended settings are given on the slide 271. You don't have to know this by heart, but you can set them to any value because this is amount of memory that is used. For example, for memcap, 137 megabytes, but you can use much more in today's machines. Similar to TCP sessions, we have for UDP sessions, new cached UDP sessions per second, cached UDP sessions per second, current cached UDP sessions, max cache, etc., etc. So we have similar transactions as with TCP, and this max UDP parameter has to be set to something, and typically to 65,536, which is 2 to the power of 16. If you have a lot of UDP traffic, you could have a mobile environment. So they use a lot of UDP. So that was about stream. Now we have FRAG. FRAG is for IP. Stream is for TCP and UDP, and FRAG is for IP. So we have FRAG deletes per second, FRAG flushes per second, current cache FRAGs, max cache FRAGs, FRAGs timeout, FRAG faults, etc., etc. Very similar to stream operation. If there are too many FRAG deletes per second or FRAG faults, we should increase the values of memcap again, but you also have prealloc memcap and prealloc frags, these two parameters, and then max frags. So there you had max TCP, max UDP, you have here you have max frags, and memcap is present in both frag and stream. Timeout also should be increased if too many frag timeouts are observed in the performance monitor report, which means that our sessions are longer than expected and we have to process them. The next statistics are CPU statistics. So you will have user CPU usage and system CPU usage in these reports, and percentage of time where CPU doesn't do anything, it is idle. It's just a snapshot of CPU usage obtained by polling the kernel of PROTS file system at the time of displaying the performance monitor report. So on single report, it's not so important. But if it is repeated over time and you get similar results, then you have to adjust for the CPU time consumption to be set as it should be. So that was about CPU, and then you have statistics about packet sizes and flow data. We have seen when we display, when we stop snort, we get some statistics by default. What fraction of the packets were TCP, what were UDP, what were ICMP and the others. Then we have in this performance report distribution of packet sizes independent of the protocol and the distribution of ports across different protocols. They give you further details about snort operation. We might have adjust them as well. We have already mentioned this, don't store large packets. So large TCP packet sizes influence significantly the efficiency of snort, so we should avoid that if we have problems. So we have a parameter for this. Also, per protocol port distribution enables proper configuration of various preprocessors. If we have a lot of HTTP traffic, we concentrate on HTTP preprocessor. If we have a lot of SSH, there is a preprocessor for that too. So we pay attention to SSH, etc., etc. So any other protocol. So that was about statistics. Now we have this profiling. So we have preprocessor profiler and rule profiler, as we have already mentioned. And we by this, we get detailed statistics of rule and preprocessor performance. So we shall get information, for example, which rule consumes a lot of resources. And then we can concentrate on that rule, eventually modify the rule in order for this to consume less resources if this is critical. So what kind of performance is important? CPU time consumption, because some preprocessors, they use a lot of CPU resources, and the number of certain procedure calls, also for checking some rules. For each check, you have to engage a routine. A functional pointer points to that routine, if you remember. These OTNs and functional pointers, they activate the software that is needed to check this particular aspect of the rule that is to be checked in order for this to trigger. So that's what we can monitor and consequently configure if necessary. After profiling, some preprocessor parameters can be tuned in order to improve performance. Some rules can be modified, maybe even deactivated for the same reason. How do we get this preprocessor and rule profile information? We have configuration option in snort.conf, profile rules and profile preprocs. We uncomment something in this file, and in such a way we activate it. The profiling statistics contain, beside the preprocessor statistics, the packet decoding, detection, logging, and normalization, everything. A layer in this profile denotes the calling level. Layer 0 means the main routine itself. For example, S5 is the stream preprocessor. Immediately after the layer 0 routine, the routines called from the layer 0 routine are listed, etc., etc., so you have indentation in the report. Then you have number or rank. The data in the statistics are sorted in the descending order of CPU time. So the thing that consumes most, it's put on the top. And then it's sorted. The routine ranked first consumes most of the CPU time. The indentation is intentional. For each layer, we have indentation. Then we have preprocessor name, we have layer, we have checks, which is the number of times the preprocessor was activated for analysis of the packet. Then we have exits, it's the number of exits from the checks. This should be the same as the number of checks, if everything was normal, because otherwise it may be a bug in the function that was checking this. If you define some new function, you may have exits that are abnormal. Then microseconds is the number of CPU microseconds spent for execution of the corresponding routine. Then you have this average per check, the average number of CPU microseconds spent for execution of a single check of the corresponding routine. Percentage of caller, if you are at non-layer 0, which is called from the preprocessors, percentage of CPU microseconds spent for that particular routine. This might sum up to more than 100% because of this task swapping and other factors that are independent of SNORT. Task swapping is operating system thing. Percentage of total is percentage of CPU microseconds spent for the corresponding routine with respect to total CPU microseconds. So we are talking about preprocessor profiling. Rule profiling is very similar. So here is an example on the slide 289 of this preprocessor profiling report. So you have the number, and then indentation is because of the color. You see the indentation, the most to the left is level 0. You see, and layer 0. So you see layer is actually reported here. It's 1 in the second line, so that it's indented, you see. So 0 is not indented. And then you have 1, and this is indented more, that's layer 2 and layer 3, etc., etc. So you call something from the preprocessor, and then from that function you call another function, and from that function you call another. You see PCRE, it's the third layer, and that's pattern matching. You see? So you have detection, preprocessor detect on layer 0. Rule evaluation, layer 1. Rule 3 evaluation, layer 2. PCRE, that's pattern matching, layer 3. And then some. These are all functions that are used by a preprocessor. And you see, you have checks, exits. They are more or less the same because there are no bugs. Microseconds, etc. All these parameters that we have mentioned. So, detection is the most resource consuming. But you see, PCRE is not that efficient either, so it's very close to the top. How can we improve overall performance? We have to reduce the average CPU time spent on processing each packet. And it is represented with total. In the preprocessor profile. You see 4 comma something and then 2 comma something, and so total is what matters here. So we have to reduce this. The number of checks should be reduced as much as possible. We correctly configure the usage of ports used by the preprocessor and instruct SNORT not to check in cipher traffic, so we can reduce the CPU consumption. To reduce average number of CPU microseconds per check, it's tricky thing. So it depends on the size and content of the packet payload, and we cannot control that in advance. So it will arrive as it arrives, so we don't know in advance. So it's not configuring the preprocessor in advance, because we don't know the payload. But still, management of ports in the TCP reassembly will help to avoid unnecessary evaluation of large blocks of payload data without rules or preprocessors to check them. For example, streaming. So we don't have any rules for streaming. There are no attacks in that. We can eliminate unnecessary rules because that will help in reducing the CPU time consumption by the multi-pattern search module, which is this PCRE. So PCRE is actually our search engine. We can also use DFA implementation. We have talked about that. So DFA is more CPU efficient than NFA, but less memory efficient. It needs more memory. But since memory is cheaper today than before, it might be worth using DFA if it is critical, but we cannot expect miracles. 10%, sometimes it's enough, but sometimes it's not enough. So we do anything we can to avoid dropping packets. So that was about preprocessor profiling. Rule profiling is similar. So we have actually a listing of consumption per rule, not per preprocessor or per function. So we do it per rule. So we this profiler provides a list of rules that are sorted in descending order by total CPU time consumption, similar to preprocessor profiling, which enables the operator to configure the rule set properly. So those that consume a lot of resources should be further checked. The columns in the statistics are, of course, to some extent different than preprocessor profiling, but we still have number or rank. Then you see internal snort rule identification. There we have some number. Then the generator ID identifies which part of snort generates the alert. For example, 1 means a rule, greater than 100 means a preprocessor, because we have preprocessors that detect attacks, like SF port scan. Then it can be also decoder, because something wrong in the packet can be detected by decoder before the preprocessors. Then revision version identifier of the rule checks the number of times the rule was evaluated after pattern match within port group or any rules, matches the number of times all rule options matched. If the rule has no options, the number will be high, because there are rules without options. Alert TCP any to any, it will alert on anything. There are no options. This is a strange example, but it is possible. Alerts, the number of alerts generated from this rule. Microseconds, it's the number of microseconds spent, CPU microseconds spent for evaluation of the rule during the execution of snort. This is similar to preprocessor profiling, like this average per check, average per match, average per non-match. Disable indicates whether the rule is disabled by the operator, but still it consumes something. And here is an example, similar list that is sorted, you see. So the rules are listed here. Number of checks, number of matches, number of alerts, number of microseconds, average per check, etc., etc. So a high value for microseconds for a given rule indicates that evaluation of that rule is costly. In that case, editing the rule to adjust to the defending network might give some gain. So could improve efficiency. A high average per check indicates a rule whose rule options are expensive to evaluate, most often because of the complex expressions involved in the evaluation. This happened before, and to avoid this, the designers of Snort actually made some preprocessors instead of a bunch of rules. That's why we have some preprocessors that detect attacks. Because it's less costly than to have 15 rules for that. Then we have average per non-match. So if we have high average per non-match, indicates a rule that is often evaluated but seldom matches. So why it is often evaluated? It might be because of a bad rule. Sometimes we may have traffic that can be detected as dangerous even without doing the pattern matching. So that's inaccuracy of the rule. And extreme example is a parameter in the rule that always evaluates false. So if we design a rule, that might be the case. So it's the operator error, because this rule will never trigger. It's enough that one parameter is false. That was all that we could do to avoid packet drop. So that was efficiency. Now we want to reduce the number of false positives. That's the second goal that we have mentioned before, and we complete our lecture with this. So once we adjust Snort in such a way that its performance is satisfactory, or at least it doesn't drop packets, the next activity is to reduce the number of false positives. To this end, we can configure network variables, we can configure preprocessors, but we can also refine the rule set. How do we refine the rule set? We can edit particular rule according to the traffic analyzed in the defending network, or we can make a new rule. We can also use pass rules, which is interesting, because pass rule is something that doesn't actually alert. It does the opposite. If everything matches, then it will not alert. So it's an inverse of an alert rule, which makes Snort ignore any packet that match the conditions. The rule is actually the same, only the action keyword is different. So instead of alert, it will be pass. So we have alert, pass, drop, whatever, but we use pass. We can use certain categories of traffic coming from explicitly given hosts. For example, if we want to ignore SSH traffic from a particular host, we say pass TCP from this address, any port to home net port 22, which is dedicated for SSH, which means whenever this traffic is detected, it will be ignored. It will be not alerted because we know that traffic coming from that rule is harmless for some reason. But as we said, we can always, as an attacker, we can always spoof this error. So we should be, we always take a risk when we adjust some Snort parameters. We take a risk that might lead to false negatives, and we have to be very careful. We don't adjust the parameters if it is not necessary. That's why we first display the statistics, and if the statistics says that there are packet drops, then we have to do something, but we take some risks. If we have a lot of false positives, we also have to do something, because otherwise the operator will ignore everything, so we take some risk. The situation like this is typical for learning environments where a lot of errors are generated. For example, wrongly typed passwords, etc. But such traffic is not malicious. Or our class, where we deliberately launch some very old attacks. We know that nobody will suffer from that, but it's just for illustration purposes. But in general, Snort would alert on this as well. Another example of pass rule application is when we want to ignore all TCP traffic from the particular host. Anything, you see, coming from that host, we just say any as the destination. We can use all options that are available when writing the alert rules, for example, the content. We can engage search. A match will say ignore.
the processing of these rules is computationally expensive, plus rules as well as alert rules. For example, if we have a host that is known to generate a lot of false positive by unsuccessfully trying to change the FTP working directory to root, so we can ignore this traffic by using pass rule, pass TCP from that address to any port, home net port 21, which is FTP. Flow to server established, content change working directory, no case, content also root. So there must be a command, CWD root, in this FTP traffic. So somebody is trying, but without success. Why? We know that he or she is trying something, and it's just experiment, it's not harmful. So we say ignore by this. Now, if we have a pass rule and an alert rule that are the same, by default, it's alert that goes first. So it's not enough just to write the pass rule. We have to change the order of processing. We have to change and process first pass, then alert. Why is that? If we still have alert and pass for the same thing, and we let alert go first, then we prevent the false negative situation if we have made an error in pass rule. For example, if a pass rule now ignores all traffic, well, that could happen. So alert, pass TCP any, that is a typical case. Yeah? So that's actually something that we have to avoid, otherwise our IDS doesn't serve for anything. And only when we are very, very sure that our pass rule is good, then we change the order of processing and give the priority to the pass rule. For example, if we have forgotten to specify the IP address of the host that we wanted to ignore in the pass rule, we could accidentally ignore the suspicious TCP traffic, everything. Well, one would say, is it realistic? Yes, because we, to create pass rules, usually edit the alert rules. And if we edit wrong, then we have a false negative situation. Technically, to change the order of processing the rules, we start snort with minus O command. But this can also be configured. So we don't have to do it if we edit the snort.conf file. Now, if all else fails, what shall we do? So we have tried all these measures and we still have a lot of false positives. So what can we do? We can develop a targeted rule set. This is a nice thing because we only have a set of rules that applies to our network. So we know that we run only Windows in our network or only Linux or only BSD or whatever. So we ignore all the alerts of attacks that are for web servers or Linux or specific. So we can just erase these rules, retain only BSD, for example. That's a typical thing. So we write a targeted rule set that alerts only on services and hosts that exist in the defending network. We automatically get less false positive because if we have a match on Windows traffic and we don't use Windows, it's a false positive. No? So if we eliminate these rules, we don't have these false positives. The second thing, we have less rules, because if the network is not so large, then we gain in efficiency by processing less rules, not only by time, but only in space. Because you remember that RTNs and OTNs are stored in advance in the computer memory before processing any packet. So if we have less rules, less size, less items on the RTN and OTN linked list,